You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Some might say that suburbia is going to the birds. To be precise, to the chickens. More and more people are keeping chickens as pets with benefits. Fresh eggs for breakfast, for instance. But keeping chickens as feathered friends isn't all that it's cracked up to be. With some help from my guest, however, veterinarian Patricia Wackenow, we'll learn how to crow with success of having healthy pets and healthy people who care for them. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Every pet is unique. Maybe they're gray in the muzzle, yet young at heart. Maybe they're growing out of the puppy stage and into their paws and ears. Or maybe they're just trying to maintain a more girlish figure. At PetSmart, we have the right food for your pet at a great value for you. PetSmart. Be better together.
Go to PetSmartDeal.com and save up to 30% on pawsome gifts for the pets and pet people in your life. Toys, collars, leashes, PetSmart gift cards, treats, and more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com today. PetSmartDeal.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Wackenow, thank you so much for being with us. Number one, how does a veterinarian get involved in poultry medicine? Because I remember in veterinary school, I learned very little about poultry.
Well, I also learned very little. In fact, I didn't do well in my poultry classes and graduated and went out into food animal medicine, but returned to school and for a PhD and a residency program, and then found out that the only PhD that was available was on chickens, on embryo vaccination. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll go with this. And I went ahead and did the PhD, and then I went to my first poultry meeting, and everybody was weird. And I'm like, oh, I am in my home. And so I have never looked back. It's been the greatest profession ever.
And you're a pathologist, so you understand what's going on in the inside of not just chickens, but oftentimes people who are affected with chicken issues, too.
That's right. I did part of my pathology training. Actually, when I first started out, my intent was to get a human pathology residency and then go on for an MD. But there's some aspects of human pathology that are a little bit disconcerting, especially autopsies on children. So I switched back to regular pathology, animal pathology, and then learned that I had to have a PhD if I wanted to teach. And I'm probably one of the few who will ever say that. My goal was to always to be able to teach.
And teaching is wonderful because that's what you're doing right now. You are educating the listener, somebody who might say, you know, I kind of thought having chickens might be fun, educating veterinarians, because we're the ones that hopefully will be called on if a chicken appears ill. And I honestly wouldn't know what to do other than get on the phone and talk to you. So keeping chickens, is this something really, I would say, this is something fairly new. Would you agree with me? Suburbia,
well,
keeping chickens.
I think in the urban setting, that's true. There's always been in the more rural settings, children that have been 4-H or FFA, and chickens are often a relatively inexpensive animal to raise compared to cattle and sheep, etc. And also the turnaround time. You can raise a broiler chicken, a meat chicken, in your backyard in about 8 weeks. And that gives the children an opportunity to be able to have an animal ready for show and sale. So this is part of why people have gone forward. And, of course, chickens are so colorful. There's so many different breeds. And then they're one of the few farm animals you can raise in a city, which is why now it's become very popular and lots of cities are looking at zoning.
Speaking of zoning, just because you want to have chickens in your backyard, number one, I'd like you to address how much room you need, but there's also legalities of it. Not all communities allow you to have chickens. Is that correct?
That's correct. And in fact, even here where Purdue is located in West Lafayette, the city of West Lafayette will not allow chickens of any kind within the city limits. And part of the reason is attraction. This is coming from your neighbors would be things like attraction of rodents and insects, smell, noise. And most cities that do offer the option of owning chickens say that you cannot own roosters. And then size-wise, it all depends really on what kind of area you want to keep them in. A lot of people think they can just put them in their backyard and often have a nice, shiny, pretty, lawn. The chicken will make use of that lawn very quickly. It'll turn into a very barren-looking landscape pretty quick. And there's also the aspects of predators, neighbor's dogs, coyotes, foxes, etc. We see quite a bit of predation. And area, usually if you have a standard suburban backyard, I don't like to see more than 3 or 4 hens, and that's it. Because some of the problems that you see is that certain diseases can be transmitted by the feces, fecal contamination. So if the chickens are close in proximity to each other, they will eat feces from the other chickens or fecal contaminated food. And that spreads coccidia, which is one of the number one diseases that I see in backyard flocks.
I know when I was in veterinary school, went to Davis, I had several chickens in my backyard, and it was so much fun. I was renting this house. It came with chickens. Like, most people, you get a washer, dryer, and a refrigerator, but no, we got chickens, which worked out well. They were lots of fun. They were really messy. They kind of had their own very unique scent. And I didn't even think about it. And yes, you're talking about you can't have roosters. I'm going to show my naivete. When they're little bitty chicks, you can't tell the difference between a boy and a girl chicken. So how do you know what kind of sex you're getting when you try to buy a chicken?
Well, for the most of the time, when you purchase from a breeding operation, which would be like Murray McMurray or Mount Hope Hatchery, one of these large hatcheries that sells online baby chicks, they have a chicken sexer there that can actually look. And you look at the vent and you look for what we call the dorsal papilla, which are just two little bumps on the inside of the vent that actually indicates that that's a male. Now, not every person who does sexing is 100% accurate. Most of them are close in commercial industry, but in backyard industry, that's not the case. So oftentimes people will order 4 hens, or 4 female chicks, and they'll end up getting a male thrown in accidentally. So this is something that you do have to expect. And it can be really discouraging because by the time the birds start to show secondary sex characteristics, you've already become attached to them. And there is no other option other than trying to find a home for the rooster. There is a procedure that people will frequently call me about, which is decrowing roosters. It's a very bloody operation with about a 50% fatality, and I consider it inhumane. And I will not do it, nor will I recommend anybody else doing it.
So you try to find a very reputable breeding facility, hope that their expertise is such that they get it right, and if not, rehome that rooster. Because, yes, anyone who's lived next to a rooster, oh my goodness, it's a great way of not having to worry about an alarm clock in the morning, but yes, it can be rather disturbing. You were talking also about pests. I know a lot of people will have chickens because they want to let them free in the garden and be a natural pest control, but they can also spread diseases. Talk a little bit about some of the conditions people need to be concerned with. Still think they're the great pets, and any pet can carry zoonotic diseases, diseases that can affect people and animals, but birds have some unique ones also.
Well, it's very important from, I know, there's very few of us poultry veterinarians. There's only about 100 of us in the U.S. and about 500 worldwide. Our duties are technically to see commercial poultry. I've been pretty lucky that the commercial poultry industry in Indiana realizes that the backyard industry, because of lack of knowledge and understanding, that they can be a source of disease for other chickens and turkeys and others. And we actually have had a case here in Indiana where backyard poultry caused the depopulation of a very large turkey industry building because of a spread of disease from the backyard industry. So I think people have to be responsible for taking care of their birds. And that means observing, looking for the type of pests that we see pretty often, which would be northern fowl mite. They kind of look like fleas. Red mite is another small mite. They also can get what we call favus, which is ringworm. And I haven't seen ringworm in years until I started looking at backyard flocks. And that can be transmitted to humans, especially with little children that are picking up the chickens and handling them. And probably the one that is most people know about is salmonella. And there are many different types of salmonella, not just Enteritidis, but others that can cause particularly children to become sick, Heidelberg, Montevideo. And I did a session just recently on backyard poultry, and the CDC actually sent me an email begging me to inform the public and other veterinarians about caution in handling baby chicks. And a lot of times you'll see them in a store such as Rural King or Tractor Supply, and some states will require that they have a covering on them, but often, not in here in Indiana, they're open. And I was, I think I shocked a parent because I was at a Tractor Supply and I saw about a 3-year-old little girl reaching in to pick up the baby chick, and I shouted out, "No, it has diseases," which wasn't exactly correct because I didn't know, but, and the mother looked at me like I was just nuts. But it's something to be very cautious about. And buying chickens isn't going out and just buying 3 or 4 for Easter because you think they're cute, because they get kind of not so cute when they're bigger and they make big messes. And if you're purchasing them because you want cheap eggs, that's probably not a good idea either, because the cost of feed and everything else makes those eggs pretty darn expensive when you add it all up in the end. They're a great pleasure, but need a lot of attention to and care. And I think talking with the American Association of Avian Pathologists is our association, and it has, it's AAAP.info. We have little brochures that you can download that tell you about handling backyard poultry. And then also the USDA has Biosecurity for the Birds, which is a program that emphasizes more management and care of backyard poultry.
What I found interesting doing my research prior to this interview is, okay, let's go to the internet, let's Google about keeping chickens as backyard animals. And so many people, because there are some really cute breeds of chickens, are keeping them as pets. And some of the warnings, like don't let children younger than 5 years of age or elderly people or people with weak immune systems handle and touch the ducklings. And I remember as a child, you know, the colored little chicks that we would get at Easter. And don't keep them in the house, in bathrooms or kitchen areas. And don't snuggle or kiss them or put your mouth on their beak. It's like, huh, hadn't really thought of some of those things. And then I understand some people put diapers on their chickens and have them indoors, which seemed so wrong.
Well, I have, now when you're looking at it from a veterinary standpoint, people can develop the same kind of attraction or relationship with a chicken or a turkey or others as they do with a cat or a dog. And one of my, the oldest chicken I ever handled was Elvis the Rooster. Elvis the Rooster had an owner back in California that was wealthy, and he was an indoor chicken. He wore designer diapers. He had his own flat screen TV, and he had his own seat at the San Francisco Opera. He went swimming every morning with his mother, and she had specially designed water wings to put on his wings so he didn't drown. He had his own groomer and his own babysitter. And Elvis lived to be 17 because he never left the house. There are ways to handle chickens if you want to keep them as an indoor pet, but some of these things can be dangerous, such as even though if you want to keep them as a pet, either indoor or partially indoor, you still must feed them the same kind of food that other chickens eat. Feeding things like table scraps, just like it's not good for dogs and cats, it's not good for chickens. particularly it's not good for ducks and geese because they have fatty livers anyway. And when you feed fatty foods, they can develop an even more fatty liver. And I had one client who picked up and hugged her goose and actually ruptured the liver, and the poor baby bled out. And so it's the knowledge of that even though these are, people are taking them in as a house pet, they still have their requirements for their health and nutrition, and also giving them exercise because they can, just like a milk fever in cattle where the cows don't have enough calcium because they're producing so much milk, in birds that produce a lot of eggs, they will also have a calcium lack, and we actually call it cage layer fatigue. We have really colorful names for our diseases in the poultry industry, but it's not necessarily associated with cages. I've seen it actually in domesticated chickens that have very little room to walk around.
We're chatting right now with Dr. Patricia Wackenow. She's a DVM PhD, Associate Professor of Avian Diagnostics in the Department of Comparative Pathobiology. There's more. Go to our website. You can see everything that she has done, and she's a genius, and she's a very unique veterinarian talking about having chickens as pets and as a source of eggs. And we'll be right back talking about how you can set up your backyard coop if that's what you want to do. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
The new Dyson Animal Vacs are powerful bagless upright vacuums for homes with pets. Air muscle and radio root cyclone technology generates the strongest suction power to powerfully remove dust, dirt, and pet hair from the home or car. To order your Dyson Animal Vac, go to DysonDeals.com. DysonDeals.com to order your Dyson Animal Vac today.
Dyson, music to your ears.
I'm not much of a reader, but I do wish I were more well-read.
There are so many great books coming out. I wish I could find a way to keep up.
Audible.com makes it easy to stay well-informed and catch up on your reading simply by listening. Audiobooks from Audible turn downtime into uptime. You'll be more productive and become well-read.
Now I'm able to catch up on all the great books I've been wanting to read.
With Audible, I feel smarter.
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to AudibleDeals.com. That's AudibleDeals.com.
Thinking about buying a monkey? How about a ferret or a skunk? Then check out the show that will answer the burning questions. Where do you get them? What do you feed them? How do you take care of them? And most of all, what were you thinking? With exotic pet expert and author Bob Tart, every week on demand from PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Pat, this is really interesting, and I know when I did have chickens, I have to admit, I did give them table scraps. But I'd like to have you kind of walk us through if somebody's thinking of having chickens. Number one, how do you choose the right bird? There's so many different ones if you want this as a pet. How do you choose what's the best one for you?
Well, I would do what people often do if they're looking for a specific breed of a dog or a cat, and there's the American Poultry Association or the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities, which they try to preserve ancient breeds, heritage breeds. And I would start looking at pictures and looking at size and dimensions of the area that you're going to be keeping the chickens in. We have three different types of chickens for backyard use. One is the more laying type. These are tall, rather thin, usually fancy-looking chickens, ones that appeal to people, but they tend to be the more antsy of the chicken group. The closer they are to the jungle fowl, and the jungle fowl is a pretty mean chicken, the more aggressive nature they will have, and they will tend to attack each other. They may try to attack you, particularly if it's a rooster. And often you may have trouble with cannibalism where they'll actually kill each other. Since pecking order is very important to chickens and they need to know where they stand in that pecking order, and that has to be established pretty early. So that's one of the reasons why you have to be pretty cautious about adding new chickens to an already established flock. Now, we have meat chickens. Then the typical meat chicken that we see for food chicken, this is called the commercial broiler, and no one should ever own a commercial broiler. They get to the market weight of 5 pounds in 6 weeks. They have
huge.
No stop button. And if you keep them, if you keep feeding them, I once had to do this because at University of California, they didn't know that it would be inhumane to keep feeding, and I wanted to restrict feed, but they thought that was inhumane. Well, I had 30-pound broilers at the end of 11 weeks. They couldn't stand. So this
wow.
is inhumane. And,
chicky.
People who are growing them for meat may decide, oh, I really like this bird. I don't want to euthanize it and have it for meat. And what will happen is if they keep feeding it, the bird will keep eating and will keep growing. Genetically, there's not a stop button. You have to restrict their feed. And since I know from experience, since I have two overweight cats, that it's often hard to stop feeding an animal that is bugging you for food. So commercial meat birds, the only really true meat bird for backyard use is the Jersey Giant. And these are pretty large birds. Usually the meat birds are calmer. And the one that I recommend for most people is the dual-purpose bird, and the ones that would fit in that category would be the Rhode Island Red and the Barred Plymouth Rock. And these birds lay eggs, but they also could be used for meat. They're pretty docile. They're pretty easygoing chickens, and they seem to get along with other chickens better than, let's say, an Ancona. The meanest backyard chicken I know is an Ancona. It's an all-black chicken. It's beautiful. But I tell you, I had one remove. I had a bandage on, and I had stitches on my hand. I went to pick it up, and it reached right down in the bandage and pulled out my stitches. And I was like, oh. So these guys can be aggressive as early as 2 weeks of age. Another aspect is to get your animals, your birds, from a respectable breeder. The biggest problems I see with disease is when people buy them at an auction. People only sell birds that are problematic at an auction. They're either sick, or they are aggressive, or they don't lay eggs, or any number of these reasons. So the other is when you're buying from a third party, such as Tractor Supply or one of these, you don't know who the breeder is. So you don't know if that breeder has healthy birds or that breeder has sick birds. And for things like salmonella, which are vertically or transmitted from the mom to the baby, this can be a big issue. And so this is I like people to go out to the farm that they're going to purchase the chickens from and take a look at what the farm looks like, take a look at what the parents of the babies look like, if you're getting eggs or if you're getting the baby chicks, and make sure that they're all nice and clean and healthy looking. And the alternative is to buy from an online commercial breeder for backyard breeds. And that would be, like I mentioned before, Murray McMurray or Mount Hope or some of these other hatcheries. The other most important thing is to get them vaccinated for Marek's disease. Marek's is number two on our disease list for backyard poultry, and it can be prevented by a simple vaccination at hatch. And usually places like Murray McMurray will charge you a quarter for a vaccinated chick versus a non-vaccinated. That's very little to pay for preventing that disease.
Great information. So now you have your chick, or actually before you get your birds to the home, a coop. And you were talking at the top of the show about, yes, you have to be concerned with predation, the dog coming over, the fox coming into your yard, cats theoretically coming in. So you should have a coop. You can let them out in the backyard or your area or yard if you're watching them. Is it difficult to construct a coop? Could you buy it? How do people decide what they need in a coop?
Well, there are many, many different coop. You can actually even rent a coop, which I actually find a little horrifying, because you can rent a coop with chickens in it. And all I can think of is that if you move chickens from one place to another, you know, like every 3 or 4 months, oh my gosh, the possibility for disease is enormous. But there are many different actual poultry sites that you can go to learn how to give instruction how to build a coop. And what I would look at, first of all, you need a coop that will keep them from wind and rain, particularly in the winter climate. A coop that has good ventilation, so some kind of window or opening that you can open up to provide ventilation because of ammonia issues. And most of the time, when I see respiratory issues in backyard birds, it's because they've shut them up tight for the winter, and the birds aren't getting enough air circulation, and the ammonia and dust are causing them to have a respiratory condition. You also want to have perches for them, and these perches should not have sharp edges. They should not be like a 2x4 that's square, because when the bird binds its feet around that perch, then they can get bumblefoot. They can get injury to the feet. You also don't want them to be leaping from a high perch down to a hard surface like cement or boards that aren't covered with some kind of litter. Usually we use wood shavings. People use straw. Straw isn't very absorbent, so you have to clean it more often. So there's a lot of different kinds of litter that you can use to pad the bottom of the coop. And you should have, if you're housing your birds and they're young, they're going to need heat supplementation. Usually that's a heat lamp. That has to be well secured, because I've seen them fall off and set fire to the coop. Hmm. That actually happened to some of my research birds. I used to go out and check them every 8 hours, even though I had students checking them. And I went in at 1 o'clock in the morning, and the lamp had not been secured properly, and it had fallen down the shavings and was starting to set the shavings on fire. So this is very important. Those lamps are hot, too. If you have children, you're going to want to keep your kids away from those lamps. They tend to get quite warm, because that's obviously a source of heat for your babies. You also, if you're going to have a coop and then an outside to your coop, then you're going to need to, if you're trying to avoid predators and you want them to be able to go outside when you're not around, you not only have to have it fenced, you have to drive that fence about a foot, foot and a half down into the ground, because skunks and that can dig under the fence. And then you also have to have the roof fenced, because of the fact that you have aerial predators. Birds have, they do kind of like the meerkats and others. They have one individual that watches out, and the other ones will be doing their own thing. And they have different noises for aerial predators versus ground predators. The only problem is that a piece of paper floating down from the air will make them make the same scared noise as a hawk coming down from the air. So they don't really discriminate very easily about who's bad and who's good.
It sounds like.
And so if they have gotten used to your dog, let's say, and I had an instance where I had one quail. Right now I can't own any poultry or any kind of birds because of the risk of me bringing disease to those that I care for. But back when I was a regular veterinarian, I had a quail, and he had developed a really strong relationship with my Siamese cat. They would sleep together. The quail would ride the cat's back around. So the quail developed this knowledge that all cats were nice. Well, my husband had the quail out in the backyard, and the neighbor cat killed it. And so that's something that can happen if they're used to your own animals, but other animals can get in. It can be an issue.
These are just amazing things that I hadn't ever thought that a quail and a cat could have a relationship, understanding the nuances of this and the care that you need. Speaking of care, we were talking earlier about feeding. And yes, when I was at Davis and I had my chickens, I would give it table scraps. Are there things, you said, stay away from the fatty things they can get, these fatty livers. Are there certain things they can't eat, like dogs can't have grapes and raisins? Are there certain things that chickens can't have? And what about things in our yards?
Well, the first and most important thing is to feed your chickens regularly, or all your poultry regularly, with the appropriate bagged feed. So Purina has bag feed. One of the difficulties I see from going and buying from you just dip your feed out of a vat in a feed store, is that you don't know the quality of that feed and you don't know what's in it. I want to come out to a backyard farm. I want to be able to look at the label so I know what's going into that feed. And you have pretty good insurance when you're buying bagged feed that this feed is appropriate. So, because they'll say right on their starter feed, it'll say layer feed. And so you really need to have the appropriate feed for the age and the function of the bird. If you try to feed babies adult feed, the grind is too large, and they can't get in their mouths, and they'll starve to death. If you feed baby feed to hens that are in lay, they won't get enough calcium. They will have the cage layer fatigue, the calcium lack. We also supplement with oyster shell or some other calcium source for the hens. and while they're in lay. When they're out of lay, you don't want to supplement calcium because they could get stones in the kidneys, urolithiasis, from too much calcium. So once you start and you have a nice established feed, you can treat them with scraps. I would avoid anything fatty, but lots of people like to throw in a cob corn, and of course they love that, and they'll supplement themselves with worms and other creatures that are out in your yard. But chickens also love anything that's shiny. I had a case where the backyard farmers were losing 30 to 40% of their flock, and they kept bringing them in, and I would open them up, and I'd find these shiny little copper triangles in the gizzard. And they were having copper and zinc toxicity. It was a combination of the two. And I couldn't figure out what was going on until I went out to the farm, and they were remodeling an 1800s farmhouse, and they were throwing the windows in a pile. And the windows of those old houses are seated with these little copper slash zinc triangles to hold the windows in place. Well, they were shining in the sun, so the chickens were fighting each other to get to them. So it was the top of the pecking order that was actually dying because they were getting the most triangles. Lead is another one we worry about. If you have any kind of lead paint, or your area was used for any kind of industrial or use where somebody might have been working on cars, they will find whatever unusual things out there and they'll eat it. And we had an instance where, again, a backyard farmer, the children had lead poisoning from eating the eggs from birds that were eating lead from running around on the farm. We're eating lead pieces off the ground.
So getting free-range eggs may not be the healthiest.
You need to know what kind of care has gone into that free-range. Personally, because I can't go out and look at the farms or look at them online, I actually eat caged eggs. And I actually eat the cheapest ones I can find because I know how they're processed. I know they're tested for salmonella. I also know that when the chickens are in cages, they roll out, the eggs roll out onto a conveyor belt. So as soon as they're laid, because one of the things that we see in cage-free is that chickens will develop a taste for eggs, and they'll actually peck out each other's vents and kill each other trying to get an egg out of the vent as it's starting to be laid. Also, when you have cage-free, depending on the type of farms, they all have to have a scratch pit. A lot of times that'll end up having dried manure because, of course, chickens go to the bathroom in the scratch pit. And if an egg is laid in there and sits in there for a few days and then goes into the food chain, I'm not real fond of that kind of aspect. Now, a well-managed cage-free farm is wonderful, and a well-managed caged farm is wonderful. So caging or non-caging, housing doesn't mandate animal welfare. Management does. People who care and give the proper management, and that's the same with backyard, will institute good welfare. Those that do not, whether it's a backyard farm or commercial farm, then that's not a good situation for the chickens. And I kind of look at cages because the chickens all know each other, so there's no fighting in the cage because they've been together from day one. And so they know where they stand in the pecking order. And we protect them from predators and poisons and from insects and stuff like this. And we test their eggs. And so I tell people, I kind of look at it like a car seat. My kids hated car seats. And my younger daughter, she was always trying to climb out of her car seat. And I was always disciplining her and putting her back in the car seat because that was necessary. It restricts her freedom, but it was necessary for her protection. So there are some things we do that tries to keep things better for the chickens.
And this is coming from a poultry expert. So people, please listen. And speaking of listening, we can go on for a lot longer because I know you have some great information. If people need it to get a source of information, if they're thinking of starting a backyard flock or if they have one, where can they go, Dr. Pat?
I think the for starting a backyard flock and learning about diseases or breeds to start out would be the American Poultry Association. You can find them online. And I mentioned before the AAAP, which is AAAP.info, which is our organization. We have a book that's called the Avian Disease Manual. It's actually written for veterinarians, but I think most people can understand it. And it actually gives bullet by bullet the different diseases and what they look like. And there's actually a CD with pictures. I love pictures.
And if you want to see a great picture, you have to go to our website and see Dr. Wackenell in her outfit when she was at a state fair because it's amazing.
Well, my informal titles and the ones that I use are either Poultry Princess or Duck Duchess. Because Indiana's number one in duck production. We've got some great duck people here. And so when I go to see them, I'm duck appropriate, where I carry a duck purse and I have a duck hat and I have duck dresses. Or duck clothes. And then, of course, turkey, same thing. So you can't, I mean, talking about diversity, I can't forget about any of my beloved poultry industry friends and people who have different kinds of birds.
I have been chatting today with Dr. Patricia Wackenow, DVM, PhD, and fabulous personality, little out there. I have been smiling the entire time, and hopefully you've been learning some things that we've never covered before on The Pet Doctor. So thank you very much for listening. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how you can be the best possible pet owner. Thank you so much for listening. Have yourself a great week.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.